Catherine, thanks a lot for taking the time. So just for a little bit of context, around 2 months ago, I was at the Future of Festival conference here in Berlin, and I was going around all of the stations, and that's where I met your dad, Mr. Daniel. And then we spoke about, you know, I was interested. I went from station to station. I was asking people like, hey, who are you? What are you doing? This is some interesting technology. And then I saw this event safety barricades or something. And then I immediately started speaking with him, and then he introduced me to the technology. Yeah. And then you arrived. So just a little bit of context why we are here. And then I said, okay, we have to give you like a platform to tell a little bit more about what you do and who you are. So yeah, thanks for taking
the
time.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, thank you for having me. This is so exciting.
So can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Let's say, what do we need to know about Catherine to understand why you started Crowdcushion and what's the story behind it? And then we can go step by step.
Yeah, so I am just a lifelong concert and festival fan. My parents have been bringing me to shows since I was like, I think I went and saw Elton John when I was like 5 years old, which is crazy. But I've just always I've always been, they're big music people. So I've always been into it. And then as I got older, I got really into the festival scene. So I live in Jersey. Well, I moved to New York, but so I would go to all of the New York festivals like GovBall and all those. And I just fell in love with the scene. And then it came time for me to kind of figure out what I was doing in school. And I decided I wanted to go to school for music festival planning. That's kind of how I ended up there. And then Crowdcushion developed from basically real life experience. Like I've been to a ton of festivals when I was younger. I felt less I was more carefree, I guess. I wasn't, the more I learned about the security and the crowd management and everything that goes into it, I felt like less and less safe as I started attending events, because then I was looking around and noticing things that weren't going well or things that maybe were missing from their procedure is what they were doing. So that's kind of how I got here.
I also remember when we started going out with Yuri in Ljubljana, and then we also developed a passion for outdoor events and we started going to festivals. We've been mostly to Ultra Europe, which is in Croatia. And I remember then every time we went to some bigger event, you don't enjoy the party so much. But once you start doing your own events, the only thing you're focused on is like, how is the production done? Where's the security? You start seeing all of these different aspects of events. So yeah, we can relate a little bit here.
It's like it gets to a certain point that it gets like a job, deformation. Like you see all the mistakes and stuff, not like really enjoying the festival, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like first few times we went there, we had a really great time. But as we were doing more and more events here in Ljubljana and like we're visiting more and more like bigger stages and stuff, you kind of see, this could be like, this should have been done better. And it's kind of hard to now get the balance, you know? Like, absolutely, to go out and like to enjoy. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I have that same issue, honestly, especially now with having Crowdcushion. Like every time I go to a show or a concert or whatever, like I tend to turn it into like a business thing immediately. Like I'm always like thinking, you know, like I wonder how we could get into this event because it really could benefit in this way. And then I could pitch it to them this way and it could benefit their security. And I'm like, all right, I need to just enjoy the concert. Like, we can think about that another day. But I know, I try to. I feel like that's a similarity to most people that work in events. Like, I don't know how to kind of totally kick that yet and just start enjoying the event. But when I figure it out, I'll let you know. If you figure it out, let me know.
I'll let you know for sure. But
yeah,
as long as I know, like, more I go to events, more stressed I am about going to events, because I like look around, and less I go to events, maybe gets like you kind of step back. But that's the only way how I coped with it, to not go out as much. But it's part of the job, you know.
Right, exactly. But you kind of have to, and also it's what you enjoy doing. So, but yeah.
Process like everything. Can you tell a little bit more about your sports and entertainment management studies, and how did that look like? Because I can't really figure, like, how does the study actually look like?
Yeah, so I didn't know. So, okay, so going back to that a little bit, when I decided I wanted to get involved in the music festival planning business, I know that I didn't want to be in the music industry. Like, I didn't want to be a booker or anything like that, but I wanted to be in the festival business. So I was looking into schools that had majors for that. And usually, like, the music study major doesn't coincide. It's not the same thing. It's more about actual music. So I found this, it's called Sports Entertainment Management. And basically, there are two different schools, really. There's like a hospitality and retail side of it. And then there's a live event management side of it. So I was on the live event management side more. Totally. And then I just chose my classes were all basically crowd management based. So basically like the science of crowd movement. I took two levels of classes of that. Just crowd management studies. We had a course every single semester. I had a course solely on crowd management, which was so beneficial. And in college, you really can like choose your classes. So there were a lot of classes that were more on sports and things like that, which I just always tried to stay out of. I'm not a sports girl at all. I'm more of a just straight music girl. But yeah,
it's amazing that you said like studying this branch, because like here in Europe, especially right now, I'm situated in Ljubljana, Slovenia, very small country, and there's only like, you know, super, I wouldn't say old fashioned like studies, but yeah, could kind of like medicine and sports and law and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's no such way as like event management and stuff. And it's like really amazing how the market narrates, like the bigger the market, the more possibilities. Did you, and going like trying to connect to that question, did you ever think of going abroad to work, or like is the market here in US just enough for you, and you have still a lot of to explore and to
For crowd cushion, meaning like to push crowd. Yeah, absolutely. So the European market is totally something that I would love to kind of infiltrate. That's why it was so exciting that we did go to future festivals this year and we got to be in Berlin and meet so many different people, because we're just so, I mean, we are. So we've only been in existence since 2020. We started at the beginning of 2022. So we're a relatively new company. So originally our idea was kind of let's conquer the US market first and then move outward. But honestly, the response in Europe and in the UK has been amazing to Crowd Cushion. And I put some feelers out. Like I sent out some promotional things to people that we had known. And I kind of figured it would be too early for them to adopt, but not at all. They immediately all reached back out. They were like, can you please come over and for some meetings? Can we get on a demo and can we do this? And they're like, I think this would be so great for our market. So that was very exciting because I didn't think that it was a possibility yet, to be honest, just because I didn't know that the market was there. But yeah, it totally is. And I think this year that's what we're really going to try to push more, is to kind of get into the European market.
And what are some of the, you mentioned crowd control or crowd management subjects. Mm-hmm. What are some of the exercises that you were doing? Were you like looking at old videos of, let's say, some event accidents and trying to figure out how would you prevent them? How did that look like?
Exactly. So it was a lot of what I really liked about the major too. It was a lot of hands-on work. So rather than just giving us giving us a book, like we study the book and then we have a test on the book. Like it was never like that. It was more, we would study something and then we would go out into the field and see it. So in South Carolina, where I was, there was a lot of music video or venues. So we would go see a show, like we would learn about something in the class and then we would go see a show and actually see, like, can you point out what did they do wrong here? What did they do right here? And then they also, a lot of what we were graded on is on-site work. So we volunteered, but you would just, I worked at a lot of the random shows at the venues. I worked as like a CSC security guard at a lot of different events and stuff like that too. But yeah, so it was a lot of hands-on work, which I really appreciated. And then also the professors were actually people who had worked in the industry. So like one of my first professor was the manager of Hootie and the Blowfish, who is like just a band that is big over here. But just people who actually are in the industry, and they know that it's not just about textbook studies, because as you guys know, this industry is not, you're not reading something and then you're not gonna be able to be thrown into an event and be like put on the event. That's just not how it works. Like they know, and it was awesome that they like accepted that and they realized that's how they should teach, is through actual hands-on work. Yeah. And they also were, I credit them a lot to my development of crowd cushion in general, because they were so, from the very beginning, they really pushed this innovator spirit. Like they would always say, you know, there's not like, there's a lot of people here and there's not that many jobs in the industry, like, and the industry still needs to grow. You guys should be thinking of things that differentiate yourself and come up with a new product or come up with a new idea that you can then implement or start your own business. Like they always were really pushing that. So, I mean, I think that was definitely very beneficial.
And can you take us back to your aha moment of crowd cushion? How did that happen?
Yeah, so as I said, I've just been a festival goer forever. And my going into my senior year of college, so that was the year after COVID. So everyone was still kind of bouncing back from that. It was 2020 going into 2021 going into 2022 that year. So I'm not sure why. I think a lot of it did have to do with COVID and people just being so excited to get back out into the world, and also anxieties being so much higher. And also, I don't know if you had this problem as much in Europe, but in the United States, as we all know, we're not really good at being told what to do, right? So everyone was told that they had to stay inside for so long. And I almost feel like once they let everybody out, it was like nobody wanted to listen to authority anymore. It was like, we're going to these concerts. I don't care. The security guards can run after me. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. And I feel like people just felt a lot more, they just had all this, like, I don't know, pent up, not aggression, but excitement to go out. And also in their minds, no longer were like, we're not being told what to do anymore, you know, because COVID's over. So I think that had to do with a bit of what I'm about to talk about. But I had gone to three festivals that I always go to, like the same three festivals. Two of them are in Chicago, one's in New York. And this summer going into my senior year, and at two of those festivals, at all three of them, I felt horribly unsafe. Like that has never happened to me before. I'm always somebody, I get there, I run up to the barricade and I stay there all day. I got to that barricade and within 30 minutes, I was like, I think I should get out of here. So as I tried to like pull back from the barricade a little bit more at this first show, and as it happened, I literally got lifted up. The crowd was so dense that I got lifted off my feet and I was literally just moving with the crowd, which is terrifying. And that's like, you have no longer have any control over what happens to you. You don't have control over you can't touch the ground and you can't get footing. So that was really scary. And then I went to another show a few weeks later, and same exact thing happened. At that time I pulled back a little further, but same thing happened. Like I got stuck, I was lifted off my feet, and that time I actually fell and I was terrified, because I like my friends, thank God, if they weren't there, I don't know if I would have gotten trampled or like if I would have been able to get back up, because my friends pulled me up, but I don't really know what would have happened if not. And then the third event, I was so scared to even, it looked like the same kind of thing. So I was so scared to even enter the crowd. I just stayed at the back, which like is so not me. I never used to do that, but I was so scared. I just stayed totally towards the back and just, which is fine too. It's not that that completely, it's not that that's not fun, but it's just
a different vibe if you're used to being in the front row.
Exactly. Totally different vibe. So, and it also made me sad because I'm like, that's so not, you know, like that's so not me. I'm that front row person. Like I shouldn't be having to like be scared. So I knew that that was happening on top of now I'm going into my senior year of school. So I have all these studies under my belt. Like I understand the movement of the crowd and what was happening there. And then November of my senior year, so I went into school, November of my senior year is when the Astroworld tragedy happened in Houston, Texas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so 10, as you guys know, 10 people were killed and hundreds of people were injured, which is horrible, like, and so devastating to me, especially for that to happen at a live music event, because that really is, like, what I'm so passionate about is just the live music of events and everyone being together and the feel of everybody being there, and it's supposed to be... Those are times, it's like escapism, you know, like that's supposed to be a carefree time for people. They shouldn't have to be fearing for their lives. And when they buy a ticket to go have fun with their friends at a show, you know? So after that happened, I was like, you know what? Obviously, this is a problem now more than ever. I don't, for whatever reason that is, but it happened to me 3 times that summer. Then this happened. So I wound up that was kind of when I was like, something needs to be done about this. So that's when the gear started turning and I was trying to figure out what we could do. And yeah, so we went on from there, but that was kind of our moment of like realization. We have to do something here.
What was some of the first steps you like when putting together everything? What did you do first?
Yeah. So I'm very lucky and my dad is my business partner. And he has owned a software hardware integration business for the last 35 years. So I had a really good backing to start to kind of launch CrowdCushion. My first step was pitching it to him and getting him to be like, okay, sure. Yeah. But he actually, as soon as I pitched it to him, he was kind of like, I mean, you think about it again, as a parent, he's been sending me off to these shows for at this point, like almost 10 years. And he was like, is this what's really happening? Is this like, is this normal? Is it normal to feel this unsafe in a crowd? And I was like, honestly, absolutely. Yeah, it is. Like, this is happening. It's a definite real problem. And then of course, I'm also an only child, him being a parent, he was like, we have to change, like something has to happen, obviously, you know? So pitched him, I got him on board and he's amazing. Like he took it and ran with it and he's a true entrepreneur. Like he loves a good idea and to kind of run with. But steps after that, we're finding, first of all, we weren't sure. We knew that there had to be sensors on the barricade. Like that's what we wanted, pressure sensors on the barricade. But we're like, how do we get them to attach to the barricade? So there was a few other things. We actually had a inflatable cushion at one point. So it was like filled with air, like a balloon. Kind of like an airbag almost. But there was a bunch of different generations of it. And then finally we found the cushion manufacturer and so a little background, but we live in a fisherman's town. So we have a lot of marine shops around, you know? And then there's this one guy who literally is 10 minutes down the road from our office. He's been there, same thing, like for the last 45 years. And he makes boat cushions, like marine boat cushions. So heavy duty, rugged, weatherproof cushions. So once we had the idea of cushions, we were kind of looking and we realized he was so close. So we went over and he genuinely like took the idea and also ran with it. Like he is a big contributor to the design of it all. And understanding how we could embed those cushions the sensors into the cushion, because vinyl also has a lot of vinyl and foam, you wouldn't realize, but there's a lot of like specifics to it. And they're just funky in their own ways. You just have to learn how to work with them. But yeah, so first step, we found him. Luckily, again, I have the software company behind me. So we already had programmers and things of that sort. So that part was easier, but the manufacturing part we had to kind of get under control. And then everything happened really quickly from there. Once we had the final cushion made, we started working. So Astroworld happened in November. We started working in December. And then we had our first fleet of cushions in our first venue by May. So it was all pretty quick turnaround. That was a pilot location, but yeah.
How was the response? If there's, like you said, that was the first kind of not prototype, but like pilot cushion. Mm-hmm. How did you evolve it? How was like the venue's response? Did people notice it?
Yeah. So the Stone Pony in Asbury Park, New Jersey was our first venue. And they're a historic venue, kind of. So they're very well known. Bruce Springsteen made them like super big. That's kind of where he got big. But they do this thing every summer. It's called the Stone Pony Summer Stage, where it's a 5,000 cap GA, just completely GA venue. But they try to maintain that old feeling of like moshing in a dive bar and like crowd surfing. So it's a really, it's a very cool venue and it's very interesting. And we're lucky too that they have these security guards who have also been there for like 20 years. They're very well trained. They know what they're doing. So they were immediately, as soon as we pitched the idea to them, they immediately were like, how can we help? And we'll do whatever we can to help you. So they immediately responded to the idea well. Then we implemented it and they were like, oh, we love it. You know, then that summer, that was the most invaluable experience we could have gotten, because every single show we would kind of like go back after with them and say, you know, how could it be better? What could we change? Was the software good? Like, what could make it easier for you to use as the end user? They would give us suggestions. We would implement that that week, and then we would bring it back the next week. And then they would give us more suggestions, and it just kind of was like a back and forth. So they did that first summer, we did 80 shows there. That was like, it basically by the end of that summer, the product was like end user ready. It was market ready because we were just changing. And again, my dad, he owns it's just a smaller family software company. So we're able to easily make little switches quickly. We don't have to like join a list of tasks, you know, we can easily change things and then implement them the next week.
You basically have it in-house.
Exactly. Everything is in-house. Yes.
Yeah, that's good. And sounds actually like a pretty smooth process. If I understood, from November to, let's say, May was the first prototype, and then you were testing it throughout the summer season, right?
Exactly.
Like 80 shows mm-hmm. or something. That's pretty mm-hmm. smooth, but I'm sure there were also some challenges. Were there any that you can point out?
Yeah, so we'll... Whenever you're creating anything new, like you're taking things that aren't meant to be used in this. So like crowd cushion never existed before. So the sensors are not meant to be used really in those cushions, you know, like because it didn't exist before. So it's all about just everything's a challenge. You have to manipulate the things that already exist to work in your product and then work all together. I don't know if I'm describing that well, but it's everything is a challenge basically when you're starting something like that, because everything is like, oh, it would be really cool if we could do this, and then it's like, well, how do we do that? Because there's no blueprint, you know, like there's no, it's not like we're building off anything, it's completely new. Yeah, so
you got to get it yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, so everything is a challenge, and everything takes a lot of teamwork. Like we have an awesome team here. But yeah, honestly, I would say like every step of the way, there's something that my dad always says, you know, if it can, it will. So you always have to anticipate every step of the way, something's going to happen. Like if it is possible that it'll happen, it probably will happen. So you just have to prepare yourself for the things that could go wrong. So you're able to then quickly troubleshoot them. So.
And so since then, how has your team grown?
So my dad and I, and then our programmer, our two programmers at first. Now we've expanded. We have 4 more team members now that are traveling technicians that travel with us. So we're growing. We're trying not to speed grow too fast. They always say, I think they say hire slow or something like that. There's a saying. But
no, I think it's also hire fast and fire faster.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, fire fast. Yeah. Fire faster. Yeah. But yeah. So
easier said than done. And let's say from the first moment when you got the idea, probably while you were still in class or somewhere, and then until the moment that you actually saw the working prototype on these barricades at the event, what was that? How did you feel as an entrepreneur and as your team behind you?
Oh my God. So that was probably like, I still to this day, like whenever we do a new event, like every time I always kind of I'm standing back once the event's on, because there's so much stress leading up to it, right? It's like the planning and then the logistics, and then you get there and you immediately have to set up, and then there's just so much that goes into it, and just, you know, you're go go go, like how it is when you're setting up an event, and then all of a sudden the event goes on and it's like, all right, well, this is it, you know, like you just finally can step back and your hands off. And then I always usually try to like go out, and I usually am in the crowd at some point, because I like to feel like I like to be able to feel how the crowd feels when, if they're compared to the readings that we're getting anyway. But I always find myself like, I'll turn around and I'll watch the stage for a minute. And I, every time, like I'm tearing up, I'm crying. I'm just like, it's such a crazy, like, we're actually doing this. Like, this is actually real. This is happening moment every time. Like, so it's incredible. And, I'm like, to be doing it with my dad too is like such an incredible experience. I couldn't ask for anything more, honestly. But yeah, and that first time that we did our first show, that was really crazy, because I literally had just graduated college. So like, I graduated in the beginning of May. I flew home, and that next week, like, we took the cushions and implemented them at the Stone Pony. So that too, for me, like, think of just how many like crazy like highs you're having at the same time, you know? It's like, I graduated college, like I'm never gonna be in school again, and I'm immediately like launching this product, and it was really cool. Basically since then, it's been like nonstop. Like, we're always doing something that's just another like really exciting, cool thing that I appreciate, honestly, every minute of it.
Actually, right now I'm thinking, maybe not for you, but for myself, and maybe even for David, that sounds kind of like American dream, you know?
Yeah, it really is, like, seriously. And to be able now, I mean, it's so much harder to just become an entrepreneur nowadays, you know, like, it's not like it was back 30, 40 years ago. Like, you could kind of, it was a little easier then. Now you don't hear as many stories like that, you know? So it really has been, I never in my life was like, oh yeah, I'm going, I just never thought this would happen, you know? Like, I never was like, I'm going to create a product, launch it, and like, it's also going to have an awesome response. I just never thought that this was where my life would go, honestly, so.
Awesome. So, David, did you want
anything? Yeah, please. I want to stay here just for a little bit. You said that you think it was easier 30 years ago than it is today. Why do you think that? Because I wouldn't be so sure about that.
You know, I know, maybe it's just me also looking back on another generation and being like, look, but I don't know. To me, it feels like back, even like just even 20 years ago, there was so much more that was undiscovered. So like, when people were developing things, they were developing things and they were the first ever blah, 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 or like the first ever this. Now we have so much, like, we just have, not that we have everything, but we have so much, right? We have phones, we have computers in our pockets, basically, you know, like, we have so many things, everything, not everything exists, but so many things exist. Like, it feels like we have everything as a society, that I feel like it's harder to then be like, I don't know, how do I think of a completely original idea that this doesn't exist at all? And then also, I mean, obviously things are crazy expensive right now, but I think that part of it too. I think things are just so much more expensive now that it's hard for people to really like launch themselves into being able to, even if they had an amazing idea for a product that they would love to launch, it's hard to then get there to that point. Like, how do you get the backing behind you? And that's why I always say I'm like the luckiest person in the world to have a pre-existing company behind this product. And I already had the engineers and the programmers and things like that. But it's so hard these days to get that. I mean, to build a team and also to then have the funds to build a team and then build a product. It's just, I don't know.
It's an American dream.
Exactly. Exactly.
I wanted to ask, so how was your thought process? Okay, you said that you would feel much better about going to concert if there was some safety regulations. How did you come to an idea to start with the cushions, you know?
Yeah, honestly, I was kind of thinking of anything. So I was like, how could this, I was looking back to these events, right? Crowd cushions that have happened in the past, things that I've been involved in. And again, I'm very barricade, like I say, I always used to run up to the barricade and stand there all day. So my view of a show is very barricade focused. And I think that that's probably why, like, that was the idea that came into my mind, you know, because that makes sense to me, because that's usually where I am. There's obviously a lot of different aspects that you could change or modify to create a different crowd pattern and things like that could happen. But I don't know. I basically was kind of trying to think of anything. And then I was like, you know, if there were pressure sensors, the whole idea was pressure sensors on those front barricades. I'm like, if there were pressure sensors on the barricade, wouldn't we be able to then know what was happening? Like, wouldn't these problems be resolved quicker? And that was the idea that was the first idea. And then basically it was about figuring out how to implement that. So how to get those pressure sensors on the barricade, or how to, yeah, basically figure that out. But yeah, that is really why. And I never thought of it like that before, but that probably is why I chose the barricade, just because my like event headspace is so barricade focused. Like, it always it's up there. So yeah.
That's amazing. That's like, sounds like very niche. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
I mean, of course, it's not niche because every goddamn concert must have like the barricades, you know?
Right.
But how, because I see like three points of focus. So one is physical, which is the barricade, and the sensors. The second one is like how to get the information from the sensors into the software, and how to get the information from software to the people that are responsible. How did you navigate that process between all those three?
So we always knew, so a little bit. So after the sensor aspect, what we always knew we needed, so we went back and we went through all of the research that was done on previous crowd crushes, especially the Astroworld tragedy, just because that was the most fresh at the time. And what everybody says is, we didn't know. We didn't know what was happening. I didn't know that was happening. All the security guards are like, we were confused. We didn't know. We weren't informed. Nobody told us. And from every level, that was what you were hearing, basically, from every level, that's what they were all saying. We didn't know. Even from the artist level, they were like, we didn't know. So we obviously were like, how, like, you're thinking about that. How do you, like, okay, so they didn't know what was happening. How do we tell all of these people at the exact same time what's happening, rather than having to, okay, someone decides, because basically what they do now is someone decides, okay, the crowd, if they wanted to stop the show, a security professional has looked into the crowd and they've decided it's time, it's gotten too crazy, people are getting hurt, we need to show stop. So then he has to then go and tell all of the people throughout the chain of command before any like movement actually happens, you know, like that just felt so like you're wasting time. And those are very precious moments. Obviously, once that happens, it happens very quickly.
Matter of seconds. Yeah,
exactly. So the idea was to figure out how to push the message at the same time to everybody or anybody who would need to know. So once the cushion is triggered, there's a red light that's on the back of the barricade, security facing. So if you think about it, those security who are behind the barricades, they can't hear anything. All they can do is see. They also can't really see out into the crowd because it's dark, you know? So they can, yeah, maybe see those first few rows, but that's it. So the idea of the red light is the red light comes on where the problem is. It hangs every 3 barricades, so it's just one area. And if there's only a problem in that one area, then only that light comes on. So it draws their eye right to the problem area. So security guards are then like, oh, I see a red light. Let me go see what's happening. So that's the first, that's the security layer. Then there's the command center, which is a browser-based floor plan, basically. And it looks like a stage front floor plan. Each of the cushions has a pin. So each is pinned in, and it's green usually. So if everything's all good, it's completely green. If something starts to happen on one of those cushions, if pressure starts to form, it turns yellow. So then, and you're able to see because you're looking on your monitor at the whole floor plan. So you're able to see immediately, your eye is drawn to where the problem's starting to form. So it turns yellow. And then if the problem persists and it turns into a dangerous situation, then the red will flash on the command center as well. Then there's text messaging. So for, yeah, security guards and people who are on the field or in the crowd, they can't hear their phone, but management, who's just roaming the building, they can look at their phones. So they get text alerts whoever you want can get a text alert, but usually it's management gets text alerts. So they're able to then, they're seeing what's happening as it's developing as well. And then the last layer is we have pagers that actually, they look like, you know, like an Apple Watch. It looks like an Apple Watch, but it's actually just like an old school pager that vibrates. And basically when the when an alert happens, that pager will vibrate until you acknowledge it. So that's for roaming security who's throughout the crowd. So they can't see anything, they can't hear anything, they can't feel their phone vibrating, but they have a watch vibrating on their wrist, they can feel that. And it then tells them pressure forming stage left, and it tells them each cushion is numbered. So it'll tell them cushion number 68 or whatever. So they know where that is. So everyone at the same time is getting that information. And it's also we call it an early warning system. So the idea is it alerts you in time for you to then do something before you have to stop the show. Like before you have to be like, okay, and go into crisis management mode. You're able to then mitigate those risks as they're happening, and you're being proactive about it rather than having to react to a crowd crush. Cause that is like an event manager's worst nightmare. How do you stop a crowd crush once it's happening? It's like, that's hard. I mean, yet to be seen, honestly. So, and then last layer, which is an optional. I mean, all of these are options and everything's like customizable to the, so they pick and choose which of these they want. But we also have a light that lays on the stage, like for the artist. So we call it an artist light. And at the Stone Pony, we see them do it all the time. And that really is the best way to stop anything that's happening. If the artist sees that light come on, they'll be like, hey guys, they wait until their song's done in the middle. Hey guys, love you so much. We're having so much fun, right? If you want the show to continue, can we just take a few steps back? And sure enough, the problem's resolved. Like that is the best way to communicate. But then in that way too, so the artist is also informed if they want that. Not all do, it depends, you know, depends on the artist and also the whole event. But yeah, so the whole role-based, everyone being informed at the same time, that's the main point of the product.
No, that's amazing. And so how many, I'm sorry if I'm jumping around back and forth, but so you said your team is 4 technicians and 2 programmers and you and your dad?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how many concerts in a day or venues in a day can you like cover? Or let's say how many events with X amount of crowd can you cover?
So that's a good question. That's an interesting question. That kind of depends. So it's also up to the event as well, how much it honestly, it really does depend how much like responsibility they want to take on in crowd cushion. So we have events that are like, just send one person and they'll be able to train my crew, and then my crew will handle crowd cushion from then on. So that's like a one person training kind of thing. But then there are some events that we do that are like, yeah, we want you to set up, take down, manage the system, and kind of do it all. If that's the case for a large festival, say like even up to probably like an 8 or 10 stage festival, we probably send like 4 people. If they wanted us to completely manage it ourselves, we probably send 4 people to that. But those also don't happen as frequently as just one-off shows happen. So the one-off shows, we send one person, maybe 2 people. We'll send as many people as they want, honestly. But yeah, it depends on the show and also how much they want us to do. So.
And how about like how much is physically possible? How many of units? How many of the units do you have? For example, if Electric Daisy called you and said, yo, we want you to implement the crowd cushion everywhere. I mean, I think it's obvious that it's a fucking, hippodrome.
Yeah.
Or where the horses race. It's fucking impossible. It's like, yeah, how much of it or for how big stages could you like do it regardless of the people?
Yeah, so we would... cushions wise that we have with us, or we have 500 downstairs right now, like in our warehouse. So we would be able in that scenario though. So like, right, EDC, you wouldn't put crowd cushion on like all of the barricades for EDC. You might put them on like, and you know how a lot of times the barricade tends to go out a lot further than the stage does. So you'd probably put it in the middle, in the high pressure, kind of like how, so like here, like this, we only did it on the high pressure areas. So like in the middle thrust area, and it extended a little bit further, but basically we would only probably do like the middle air, or like as long as the stage goes, and then the rest of the barricade we wouldn't need. And then also a lot of times, like some will do events and they'll be like, we know that our most energetic stages are the main stage and the dance stage. So we're only going to do crowd cushion on those 2 stages. And we're going to do the whole stage with those. Or we're going to do the high pressure areas on all of the stages just to be safe. But we would have enough cushions to cover EDC, but because that's massive, we probably wouldn't take any other events that weekend though.
So that's enormous.
Yeah.
You can tell exactly how it looked like, because I saw you were on Soundstorm, right? In
yes,
Caribbean.
Yes.
Yeah, walk us through that process. How did that look like?
Yeah, so that was crazy. That was like the coolest experience, because also I never thought I would be in Saudi Arabia. So that was pretty cool. But that process actually happened pretty quickly. They reached out to us a few months before. And actually during that time, the longshoremen strike happened. I don't know if you... remember, I don't know if that's as prevalent there, but anyway, there was a strike. So literally nothing was being shipped for a full week over here. So that was also stressful, because that was in the middle of our prep to go over there. We were supposed to be shipping our stuff over there and there was a strike. But anyway, so we sent over 100 cushions there because it was our first time doing it. So we wound up putting, I think we put 60... No, we put 20 in the dance tent, because the dance tent is usually a smaller stage. Like that's a normal average stage front, like DJ layout, stage front barricade kind of thing. So we put 20 cushions there, and then we put the rest of the 80 on their Big Beast, which was their like massive stage that has like, I think they broke the Guinness World Record for largest temporary screen wall ever like used at a festival, which is insane, but it was massive. So for there, we just did 40 cushions on each side, starting from like the middle of the thrust to probably the middle of like the end of the stage. But it covered, that was all they needed. That they did not need any more than that. Honestly, that pretty much covered it. So That's a good way of looking at it. But we really work with the event producer, whoever's putting on the event, to figure out. We try to say, like, in previous years, where did you have issues in previous years? Why are you calling us now, right? Like, where were the high pressure areas before? Let's look at those first and try to put cushions there. Why did things happen? Why did things happen? Let's try to strategically place cushions, you know, in problem areas. So yeah, so basically that's how we determine it.
So you can probably also learn a lot from the reports. I saw on the website that the system can generate report after the event, mm-hmm. which you can then look with the promoter or with the safety manager. How does that look like?
Exactly. So we have, there's a few different reports you get. So you get one kind of overview that basically is like the all the different hours of the day this way and all the cushions this way. And they're just little dots. And basically it, so the system checks itself, like it checks each individual cushion every minute. So there is a little green dot on the thing, just that says like, okay, it was working and nothing was happening for every minute, which is really good to know, especially litigation wise. Like, here I had this and it was working and this is my proof that it was working. Anyway. And then we also, you can run a system test during the show too. I didn't mention that, but basically it tests the whole system and then documents it. So then any system tests that were run are then laid out for you then on that report too, and at the exact time. And then if any incidents had happened there, if pressure is starting to form, that's a yellow alert. If a critical alert happened, that's a red alert. So they're just little, there's either a yellow dot for an incident happened or a red dot for a critical alert. And those are all laid out for you. So basically, like at the end of the night, you can say, if for some reasons cushions 4, 5, and 6 were kept going off the whole night, I don't know why, like what happened? Then you can look back and what was happening during those times that was making that happen or making the alert happen, right? Was the performer standing directly in front of those cushions for a majority of the show rather than standing in the middle of the crowd and everyone was pushing over there? Or was there crowd surfing happening? Like, were there a bunch of crowd surfers and we don't know why? Or was there a rowdy fan up there who was just causing a problem? We don't know, but you can then take the report and compare it to the event report from that day and be like, what can we, and especially in a festival setting or in a setting like the Stone Pony where they have events every single week, like how do we arrange the barricades next week to make that not happen? Do we have less people? Which usually is never the answer. So just never the answer is less tickets, but it's, do we, instead we do a curved barricade, maybe we do corrals instead of just having everyone free flow as a GA. So it's just having that information to then be able to, right, make adjustments for the next time, make adjustments for next year or the next festival they do or the next time they work at that venue, you know?
That's what I also wanted to ask you even before, since you studied crowd management, what are some of the other interesting technologies of crowd management that we as event goers maybe don't even recognize? And you have knowledge of the field, you work in it. What is something like that? Let's say some camera systems, some movement detectors or anything like that.
Well, a little bit going back though, it was interesting to me how many, or there is a lot of awesome technologies, but it was interesting to me that something like crowd cushion did not exist before. Like when I had the idea originally, I was like, this has to exist already, right? Like it seemed so simple to me that I was like, something like this has to exist. But what they do use, well, most places have, most large venues have CCTV, so the cameras, which are awesome. But then I also know there's this company, it's called AdAir, which they have these cameras that are just like insane quality cameras, and they can zoom in, like it can be on a building 2 blocks away and it can zoom in to a person like standing right next to me and you can literally see their facial expressions, which that is like, I don't know, that's just so insane to me that they can do that. And also that works really well hand in hand in crowd cushion, because if you have your cameras right up next to your crowd cushion command center, then you're able to, as soon as you get an alert, you see that, you can look into the crowd and see what's happening, and then zoom in and you can actually see like, oh, that's what's causing that. Which, so anytime we've gotten to work next to them, that's been really cool. Then there's also a lot of really cool like heat mapping. So they basically, I have no idea how it works, which also, again, going back to a little bit about me, I never thought I would be a tech person at all, which is funny. Like we always used to laugh with my parents because I'd always be like, I will never work with you guys. I'll never work with you because I'm not a tech, like, oh my God, never. And it's just funny. Now they laugh at me because they're like, haha, look at you. Now you work here. But yeah, I have no idea how the technology behind the LiDAR and the heat mapping works, but it's so cool. You can literally see, like, it's like an overhead view and you can see each individual person. And like, I've seen them sometimes, it's funny when they're mosh pitting and you'll see like, it's just like a circle of like people going around in these little dots. It's just, it's cool. But there are some really cool technologies, and especially now like emerging tech coming out. It is interesting to me that before there just wasn't as much technology as I guess I thought there would be, because we live in such a technology heavy world. Like, you would think that also events were also super techie. And, you know, when you look at the stage, obviously the stage is crazy tech with the lights and the pyro and all that. But the actual like crowd management aspect of it, there's really not that much. There isn't, other than those few that I know about, you know?
Yeah, and I wanted to elaborate a bit. So what is your focus now with expanding the brand? Is it more like finding new technologies or new products to go on the market with? Or is it more like, okay, so we've got a solid product, we need new customers, we need to expand? Or is it both? What's your next focus?
I think it's both. Right now, yeah, we're really trying to push into the festival market this year, because that's really where, that was my intention for Crowd Cushion, really, and it makes sense to me, is in the festival market mostly. So yeah, honestly, new customers, bigger events, like just keep focusing on doing bigger and bigger events so we can get those on our resume essentially and keep doing more. But we're also always looking, like, we never say Crowd Cushion is never like a completed product. We say like we're always kind of adding things and adding new, our command center, like just new cool things to the command center and stuff like that. So yeah, just keep developing the tech. Also, hopefully creating more that complements it, like more crowd management tools that complement it as the years go on. But first, now we're really trying to push this year. I'm very passionate about the product. I'm not great at marketing. So this year I do have to focus a lot on marketing, and getting our name out there. But
I think, my take on it is that at some point your product is going to be mandatory on the festivals. There's not going to be any more like just raw steel barricades and stuff. It's going to be like only safety first. And I think it's going to be mandatory.
Mm-hmm. I would love that. And that is kind of, that's where I'm at right now. I'm trying to figure out how we can make that happen, basically. So like, I've been trying to reach out to more like municipalities and government, rather than, because we were selling strictly to, you know, or trying to sell and marketing to the festivals and the venues and the people that actually put these things on. But I do think that, yeah, because once it's government mandated, like obviously everybody has to have it. It would be nice if people just did it on their own free will. But yeah, I do think that is, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that is in the future for us. I'm going to try to push that hard. And I don't see why not, because they mandate so many other things, you know, like even if the fire department had to, they mandate how many people could be in that building. Also, I'm not saying that this would be a thing, but they could also say, you know, your current capacity is whatever, 5,000. if you add crowd cushion, your capacity could be 5,200. Then you could sell 200 extra tickets and then they'd be happy, right? So I don't know. We'll see. I'm very hopeful and everyone's very enthusiastic about the product. Honestly, like pretty much everybody I talk to is a supporter. So it does make me feel good and I just keep pushing, you know?
Because in the end of the day, you know, we are talking about lives and safety. And as you said, I also believe that sooner or later, this is going to be a demand before you get your event approved. Because it's not like, okay, you're doing some fancy decorations here and there that make the event, okay, they maybe make it a few percent better. But this here, we are talking about safety. So I think you are on a good way.
Exactly. And I think, at least from what I've heard, is when the steel immovable barricades that we're talking about, like those ones that are everywhere, when people started trying to implement those into the industry as well, it took time actually to get everybody on the same page. And I think it actually took, I'm not sure what wound up finally happening to make everyone have them, but it took like quite a bit of time to get everyone on the same page. Like, yeah, we cannot have that bike rack anymore. Or like, we need steel barricade. So I think it's just everything, you know, takes time to catch on, but.
Takes time for adoption and for people to get it into their heads.
Exactly.
So yeah. And I also remembered one anecdote from my own experience when I had this. It was on Ziget Festival 6 years ago. And Post Malone was playing, and there was a changeover between, I think probably it was between Post Malone and Martin Garrix, because you know this big stages, it's everything everywhere. And I remember, let's say, or it was the other day, doesn't matter. One act was stopped the show, and then we were looking left and right over the heads, and then just 5 minutes before Post Malone came on, like thousands of people just moved as a sea and you couldn't do anything. And that why I tell this is my next question. What would you tell to event goers or festival goers? What are some of the tips they can keep in mind if something like that happens or maybe even prevent it?
Yeah, so the first tip is always something that I usually don't listen to, but is to not enter the pit. It's always to stay as far back as you can. But for people like me, who obviously that's not the ideal scenario, honestly, making sure stand with your feet far apart. Like, don't be standing with your 2 feet together. Make sure you have a good stance on the ground at all times. Also, always having a buddy with you. Like, you should not be going into a pit of a festival by yourself, because also nobody knows, and we all know how festival phone can be like. Signal is and stuff too. Nobody knows where you are. Nobody knows what you're doing. Like, people around you don't know you. They're not going to be looking out for you. Anyway, so always have a buddy. That's like my number one. And then also they say, if you do happen, so like what happened to me where I was lifted off the ground and I then fell, they say that you immediately should go into, I don't know if they call it the same there, but armadillo. Have you heard of the armadillo where you anyway, you should basically cover.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You cover your head, and basically, because then you cover your heart too and all your innards. But you cover your head and you just go into a ball on your side on the floor, which hopefully it would never get to that point. But if it did, that's definitely. Also, always look at your exits before. Always look for all of the exits around you, like while you're in the group, before you go into the crowd, but while you're there, make sure you know how to get out.
I was just thinking. When you say like people falling on the ground in the marsh pits or even in whatever death walls or whatever sorcery they're making, have you like thought of like floor pads censored so you could monitor like where is the mass like gathering and for potential, I don't know, it just came to my mind.
Yeah, we have actually. And that's something it's interesting. We are still actually, we're trying to figure out how we could implement that basically, because it's, when you think about it, it's like festivals and stuff. They're usually in a field or on unsteady ground, you know? So in a venue, it would be easy to like roll something down and have the sensors read accurately. Yes. In a festival setting, it might be, or it would be more challenging, but that is something that we talk about. Yeah. Because then you would be able to have the stage front, the floor. Then we've also talked about having like just little stanchions throughout the crowd. So then you could also have pressure sensors against those too. So then you would be getting the readings from right all throughout the crowd. But that's another thing that forward looking. Yeah. That would be awesome. To implement as well. But yeah. Oh, and going back to the Post Malone thing, I'm like a Post Malone super fan. Like I've been to every single one of his tours. Like I usually will go to a festival if he's gonna be there. Like, and if it's achievable for me to get there, I'm like, all right, well, I have to go, you know? So I will be at Coachella this year. But anyway, I was at one of those times I felt uncomfortable that I was talking about. I was at the front of the stage waiting for a Post Malone show. And the real issue, I kind of understood why it was an issue. Basically, Polo G, do you know who that is?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard of him, but just one of many rappers.
Exactly. Yeah. He's a rapper and like his fan base. I mean, I like a lot of his music, but his fan base is a lot of like, younger men, right? So like, but also very young, like 15, 16 year olds, like high schoolers who also are not very, one, probably not to categorize them, but probably considerate about the people around them just because it's not going through their head. And two, they're probably not seasoned festival goers at that age, you know, like they're young. So they don't really know the correct festival etiquette. So I was at the front, like, by the front, waiting for Post Malone to come on. But I went to Polo G's set too, because he was the set before, so I had to get my spot, whatever. Anyway. And during 10 minutes into Polo G, I was like seeing my life flash before my eyes. I was terrified. I was again being lifted off my feet, moved around with the crowd. I couldn't move. Kids were like throwing elbows, shoving each other. Like it was a whole thing. But yeah, it was right before Post Malone as well. And again, it's interesting. And that's always what I say. The most high risk events are those multi-genre festivals. Those festivals where you have EDM, like you have Galantis, and you also have Post Malone. And then you also will have like Travis Scott. And then you'll also have Chapel Roan or Charlie XCX or someone even like Nessa, like just the genre is all over the place, which I think a lot of times that contributes to, I mean, those are kind of festivals I love because I'm such a, like, I love all genres, honestly. And I love that, but they're so high risk because the demographic is all over the place. You know, like there's these kids that are there to see intense hardcore rap and they want to like push and mosh and they want to do that. But then there's also these younger girls that are there to see whatever, Chapel Roan or whoever, and they're there more to like dance and have a good time and be with their friends. So there's just such a mix of demographics happening that's what tends to cause some commotion, I think. And yeah.
Because I don't see something like that happen at a techno event, you know,
exactly.
at a club. Because
exactly.
Even, I believe, let's say we take a techno club here in Europe, and even if you would fill the capacity up to the maximum, okay, not necessarily the safest, but people are still, you know, they're all faced in one direction. Nobody's pushing. They're in their own, you know, little universe, moving left and right. There's no pushing or mosh pits.
Exactly. And also it's like crazy to me that happens too, because I got really into, that's once I got into festivals, I got really into EDM there, and I go to a lot of EDM festivals, but it's just so interesting, the different, because the whole idea of a festival is supposed to be like people who love the same thing, love the same music, coming together and peacefully existing together and enjoying the same things, you know, having an amazing, again, that whole festival is all about that, like escapism, you know, that they talk about. So it's like being in this environment with these people who are of usually like a same mind as you, or at least you share this connection over the same music. So everyone's enjoying it and loving it and loving the environment. But the problem again is when you then go to these, or you throw people in who are not, I don't want to say, like, they just don't know the festival etiquette. Like, they're not normal festival goers, so they don't know how they're then pushing and shoving and rushing the stage and doing all this. And it's like, again, that never happens at my EDM festivals, you know? Like, not never, but not as often.
It's pure adrenaline, and it can quickly go out of control.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And the mixed demographics that you mentioned. Yuri, you can quickly tell your anecdote when you worked at Metal Days as a security. I wanted to ask you. You can tell Catherine, and maybe your product could also save some stress there.
Yeah.
You know Metal Days?
Yeah, I've heard of it. One of our programmers actually he's in a few heavy metal bands. So he's like so he always brings me these cool festivals that I would never know about. And he's done a bunch of festivals in Europe, actually, like touring on them, which is cool. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. So I was a security guard on the main stage on Metal Fest or Metal Days. And it's a stage, it's a big stage with 15,000 people. And, you know, the culture of crowd surfing and stuff. And I was kind of new to this culture. Of course, I listened to metal before, but, you know, to experience it in such a huge amount, I never did before. And it was crazy. The masses, like how they, you know, and all the death walls and all the mosh pits, and it was crazy. And kind of, I think, it would not be in the metal culture to give them the cushions, you know, because they're raw and they drink beer and they throw hands and stuff. The sweetest people in the world, but still, you know, like raw Vikings and stuff. But it would save quite a lot of broken bones and just like cut skulls and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know one lady was like, she was super tiny, and what was the deal? Yeah, so she was in the front for which one was it? I think it was not Rise of the North Star, but the Architects. So she was in the front, and then was like big, massive 130 kilo dude, you know, like just crowd surfing. So he fell onto her head and she hit like with her nose, and she got like all fucked up nose.
It was
right in front of my face, and I couldn't do nothing because I was like 90 kilos trying to lift this 130 kilo man crowd surfing, you know?
Yeah.
And, I think this would not happen with a crowd cushion.
Yeah, so the Stone Pony is a big, like, heavy metal. It's definitely to a lesser extent. That's a 5,000 cap venue. But still, they encourage, like, moshing and crowd surfing, and they encourage that behavior, which is why, yes, it wouldn't be, you know, I know that those heavy metal people are so, like, they're just, like, they're, like, we can take on anything, kind of, you know?
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But still, it's like being able to have something like that as for the event managers as a fallback, you know what I mean? To be able to then, they understand what's happening rather than, because crowd surfing doesn't always have to be dangerous, you know what I mean? Like, you can allow crowd surfing and you can allow moshing to an extent. It's just sometimes it goes a little bit overboard, you know? But it doesn't have to not exist. Like, crowd surfing and moshing are things that will continue to happen, and that's okay. You know, you can do it in a safe way as long as you have the tools to prepare you. But that's insane. I could never imagine. I have the only shows that I don't go out into the crowd during, actually, at the Stone Pony are those heavy metal shows, because they're so intense and people are already like, it's just, I'm not, again, I'm being smart because I'm not in that, like, I'm not an experienced heavy metal mosher, so I'm not going to put myself in that situation because I have no idea what to do, honestly.
It would probably be too dangerous.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, David, if we're talking about like crazy crowds, our first experience was moshing with, like, you know, kind of moshing on Ultra Festival. Ultra Europe, when there's like EDM but a bit more grimy / UK bassy-ish act. I don't know which one was that. And we were like, oh, it's a mosh pit, it's a mosh pit. And then I came to metal days and I saw what a mosh pit really a mosh pit really is. And then after that, like two or 3 years after that, we went to Exit Festival, David, and it was Sheck Wes performing. Oh boy, I twisted my ankle so bad. it was nasty, but one of the craziest experiences. Like you kind of grow through pain with your friends together.
For sure. And that's also part of the festival experience, is kind of doing the whole like down and dirty like thing, you know? You're kind of,
that was dirty.
Just surviving.
Trust. Yeah, that was dirty, yeah. and the dust. Oh my god.
I could imagine.
But, you know, it's a charm of a festival.
Exactly. And I've seen him before too. It's so funny. And that's also a lot of that, even same demographic I'm talking about too, though, like younger, like high school, college days, age boys just being like whipping themselves around, you know? That's definitely Sheck Wes.
Yuri, as we said a few times, it was a humbling experience.
Yeah. It was a humbling experience indeed. And after that, imagine like 3 days on a festival and the last day going on Sheck Wes at, I think he was 11:30 during the night, twisted my ankle and then still be up for 7 hours dancing. My ankle was like this. Oh, nasty. Like really, really humbling experience.
But you can figure it out the next day. You were at the event
that day. Yeah, exactly. That was my philosophy.
Exactly.
Still, I was figuring it out for the whole fucking 7 days after that.
Oh my gosh, it was a 7-day festival?
No, it was a 7-day, the biggest ankle in the world. Yeah.
As long as it went down, did you go to the doctor?
Yeah. No, I did not.
Oh, good. See? You're like a heavy metaler.
Ah, I wouldn't say that. I'm more like a old dad mode now. No. Not going anywhere except for, I don't know, once in a 3 months to the club. That's it.
That's right. Still works.
Cool. So, Yuri, I mean, do you have any more questions? I have two more, but if you have anything, feel free.
I mean, I just want to add that I'm really super surprised that you kind of picked that as your first step in your career. Like, I'm really like seeing that as a big potential. I don't want to be like too, you know, looking from the top, but like I've seen some crazy fucked up shit happens because of not crowd cushion, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I'm really interested in if we talk in a few years time where you're gonna be.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and my question is, during this process, what did you learn about yourself as a person?
A lot, for sure. I was never a super anxious person before, but this is definitely like an anxiety provoking, in an exciting way, experience. But I think probably, honestly, just like persisting, like the fact that we get a lot of no's, but there's a lot of people when you're coming up with an idea, you know what I mean, that tell you no, you know, like there's a lot of, and sometimes pushback, you know. Yes, resistance. And that comes with change, right? And whenever you're trying to make a change, you'll get resistance. But I think I'm proud of myself because I haven't let it discourage me. Like I really don't, even when people would say to my face, like things, I really have never let that discourage me. Like I just believe so strongly in our mission and also like in the power of live music. And I just never want that to be disturbed or disrupted or tarnished by these tragedies that happen. So I think I feel like I believe more and more in myself as it goes on, which is good. I was if we had done this podcast at the beginning, I would be like shaking in my boots. Like I wouldn't be able to talk. I was a more, I don't know. I wasn't as confident in myself. I think that I just keep believing in myself more and more. And I think it comes from believing in the product so much and our mission so much. But yeah, it's definitely been some crazy. I'm 24. So like in the years since college already, like from age of whatever, 21 to 24 would be pretty developmental years for anybody in general. And I think the fact that I'm also doing this alongside of it is just, I think it's awesome. I think it definitely makes me put myself out there more, and I have to grow a little quick. I just have to be sure in myself, but I think that's a good thing. I think I'm always learning more about myself, but yeah.
You will never stop learning, like all of us, probably.
Exactly.
Cool. So is there like a final message you would like to send out to promoters or to event goers? And of course, where can people find you, Crowdcushion? Where can they call you? Where can they reach you?
Yeah. So basically just if anyone wants to get on the journey with us, we'd love it. And any ideas too. We also love feedback. You can find us, crowdcushion.com is our website, but we also have all of the socials. So we're just either crowd-cushion or just crowdcushion on all of our social media platforms. And yeah, please contact me because I'm always available just to chat also. And again, I like ideas. So.
Okay, cool. Amazing. Then I think that's it for today. We can do something like this, let's say next year. And we do a little check-in of how you're doing, how the team is doing. Say hi to your dad.
I will. Thank you so much. This is awesome.
Yeah, and anytime if you come to Europe, feel free to message us, me or David. David is usually in Berlin or
usually.
Yeah.
And I'm sometimes. Usually, I'm usually in Ljubljana. Slovenia. So if you want to party, go to Berlin. If you want to chill around the beautiful mountains or the seaside, come to Ljubljana, Slovenia.
Awesome. That's so nice. I probably will take you up on that offer because I've been trying to travel more. So
for sure.
Well, it was so nice. Thank you guys so much. This was awesome.